It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 93% always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Joe Pakovitz is here.
Hello, hello.
And if you notice, I have about, 30% of a voice, so I may stop talking at any moment. We played my YouTube trivia band, which I have mentioned on the show, played 3 4-hour shows in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, I learned I can do it, which I wasn't sure when I agreed to the gigs.
Yeah.
But I now also know the results of doing it.
How far before another show?
Thursday.
I was thinking like a month or something. It's like, Oh, no, it's this week.
Thursday, St. Patrick's Day at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Yeah, so after this podcast, I'm going to wave to both of you and go to bed.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you waking up for the show.
We'll take our leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this week, a major thing happened that seemed like a minor thing, and then people just got more and more crazy about it. With Batman versus Superman coming out in the next 2 weeks, Marvel thought it was a smart idea to release another trailer for Captain America Civil War, which comes out in May.
Yeah.
Makes total sense.
Well, it's like Marvel taking a poop on DC's lawn. you know what I mean? It's like, that's pretty much what this trailer was.
Yeah, and as I said last week on the show, DC is the Burger King of superheroes.
Yeah.
So, like, they just showed off their, like, barbecue sauce with the onion rings on it.
and Marvel is like, the McRib's coming back. Yep. Breakfast 24 hours.
Yep. Shamrock shakes, Shamrock everybody. Shakes.
Yeah.
So we have a new trailer. And?
Really, really good. I think a couple things I guess I was a little surprised about. Not so much like the content of the trailer. I think we all kind of knew. I think we've talked. Whenever they announced Spider-Man was in this movie, we were all like, yeah, cool, Spider-Man's in the movie.
That's the big deal. They haven't shown him anywhere before.
Yeah.
And he's, if you could even do this, he's an extra scene in a fucking trailer.
Yep.
Yeah.
They show the title, they show the date, and then they're like, oh yeah, here's Spider-Man. And you get one good look at him.
Yeah. And it's, I guess I'm confused. People really like it, and that's great, because I think he looks great. But
people are going nuts.
Yeah.
Some people, like, I guess hate it, and they're like, it looks terrible, why does he sound like a kid? And I'm like, do y'all remember when Spider-Man was a teenager for 30 fucking years?
Yeah, he's supposed to be in high school.
Yeah.
Remember when he was a teenager, when every actor who ever played him made their first movie?
Yeah.
At the age of 30?
Yeah. And I guess it's like they finally cast like a, you know, the kid who's playing him is like 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, good job, Marvel. And people are like, oh, he's too young. And it's like, he's supposed to be a kid. If Iron Man's been Iron Man for like 10 years.
Well, that's what happens when you get the people who haven't read the comic books going to the movies, though.
Yeah. And,
but they keep going to movies where he's in high school.
Right. Well, and but I think that's why, I guess what I don't understand is, yes, they've had a bunch of 30-year-olds playing Spider-Man, but he's every movie, he's in high school or he just graduated high school. It's like, you know, it's like they just did the logical thing they should have done 15 years ago is cast a teenager as Spider-Man instead of a 30-year-old who looks like a teenager, you know?
Yeah, and I am a big fan of the older Peter Parker anyway. I said it on the show before. I love it when he's like, can't make his rent, and he has trying to sell pictures of himself.
Yeah.
And he's living on his own, and he's trying to date girls and missing dates because he's Spider-Man. I like that kind of mid-20s, you know, like, depending on the decade. He was very Generation X when I was in my 20s. Then he's very millennial now. I like that, but it's really smart for Marvel to make him a teenager again, because if you look at Marvel Studios, they don't have anybody like that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there's no X-Men teen teenagers running.
Yeah, they don't have the New Mutants.
Yeah. Right.
They haven't made a New Mutants movie yet.
Right.
Right. It's and like Fox would make it if they were going to make it.
Right. And I think that's why, you know, and, you know, they're going to do their own individual Spider-Man movie. But yeah, it's like this Marvel continuity is supposed to be like the early years. Spider-Man shouldn't be a seasoned veteran hero. He should be the rookie kid,
right?
Because there isn't there like John said, there's no other character that Marvel has that even comes close to this. Even all like the quote unquote sidekick characters like Falcon or War Machine or some of the other Avengers, they're all in their 30s or 40s. You know,
they're all
like,
they're all identifiable adults. They've all been in this particular superhero or military game for a while.
Yeah,
here comes this kid from Queens who's just got bitten by a spider. He doesn't know what to do with it.
Right. And it's, you know, like I said, I think it's, I mean, and the other complaint you hear is like, oh, it doesn't look anything like the comics. And it's like,
yeah, people who haven't
read. Okay,
that's
insane.
Yeah, they, when that's like, they were saying, it's like, why his eyes don't look right? And it's like, what about his eyes? They've never looked more right.
Well, that's the thing that surprised me is that they did not go with another costume, an all new costume reboot.
Yeah.
They went back to the Romita Sr. run, and it's absolutely perfect. In fact, on Facebook, the Romita Sr. Appreciation Society posted pictures of the trailer and a panel from one of his books.
Yeah.
And it's dead on. They couldn't make it any better.
Right.
And I was a little surprised by that because, if anything, I would think that they would have gone for an all-new costume to sell a different line of toys.
Right.
But it is an all-new costume because it doesn't look anything like Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield. Yeah, we don't have the raised webbing, that raised silver webbing pattern that we had on all the other movies. Let's just cut right to the chase. The eyes are articulated.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And what's surprising about it is how quickly, and I don't know that it's not a response to Deadpool. I think Deadpool was the first movie we saw where they had like the white eyes.
Yeah.
That moved.
And I remember we talked about that when we talked about the Deadpool movie.
And it looked great.
He's the first superhero with white eyes, and almost all mass superheroes have no pupils.
Right. And I think that's something where if that's something maybe from the test footage that got leaked, presumably by Ryan Reynolds a few years ago. And Marvel's like, that's how we want to do Spider-Man.
Well, also, even though Fox and Marvel don't get along, they're talking. So Marvel knows that they were going to make these white articulated eyes. And I'm sure Kevin Feige's like, you know what? That's how we should do Spider-Man because we've been putting sunglasses on his head for every movie.
And it's so...
And how long until DC does this? Like,
oh, I'm is the Flash going to... next Batman movie will have them.
Green Lantern or the Flash going to have.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's something where it was interesting not to see it, you know, originally to see Spider-Man without the articulated eyes. Like you said, it kind of was like sunglasses or like a biker helmet visor. Yeah. But now we've seen that already. The technology's more improved, you know, where it's like, it's kind of like a lens where it was like a camera focusing almost when he squints.
Yeah. And on the freeze frame, you can kind of see separations inside the black outline where sections are telescoping out.
Yeah, and it's something where it's like, clearly this kid didn't make it in his room. You know, this is something like Iron Man's like, hey, I'll give you a new suit. Come join, you know, register with
the
government.
That's the theory I have, because in the Civil War book, Tony designs that Iron Spider suit for him, and his payment is unmasking at a press conference, which I am sure will not happen in this movie because that fucked up Spider-Man for like a year.
Yeah.
Like not just in the story, but like Marvel had to do some really bad retconning and backpedaling to get out of that because it hurt the character. There's some characters where their secret identity is central to them.
Yeah.
Iron Man, nobody cares.
No one cares. Yeah, it's, you know, the bodyguard thing's a nice goofy touch or whatever, but ultimately that character works better where he's like, I'm Iron Man. His brand is Iron Man, you know? Spider-Man's a paranoid kid who covers head to toe so you can't even tell what race he is.
Yeah.
That's how protective he is of his secret identity. And I really doubt they're going to do their identity reveal, but I do think, I wonder how much of a origin this is going to be, or if it's just...
They're going to take him as is, like, okay, here's Spider-Man.
Right, because we don't really need to see, I don't want to see Uncle Ben.
I don't
want to
see a third origin.
Yeah.
No, and Marvel said they're not doing it. Yeah. Well, because they know, I mean, even though they're different companies, Marvel obviously knows what happened in those Sony movies. And everyone knows that rebooting Spider-Man just because you changed the actor was a big mistake.
Yeah.
So they're changing the actor again. They're not going to make that same mistake. When we have this Spider-Man movie, it'll probably just be Peter's in high school. He's already been in Civil War, so the character's totally established.
Yeah.
And I think it can kind of be like the Hulk. The way they did the Hulk is, you know, Mark Ruffalo was a recast from Ed Norton, but that movie still kind of counted. It didn't contradict anything.
Right.
And, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is in the Ed Norton Hulk. But also, the Ed Norton Hulk was sort of a sequel to the Eric Bana Hulk, where they didn't contradict anything that happened in that. So it's always this kind of like sideways sequel where they didn't make a big point to say, we're rebooting Bruce Banner, we're rebooting the Hulk. But with each movie, they refined him a little bit.
Well, in those movies, you don't really have to because, let's face it, you know, Ed Norton didn't exactly make the Hulk his own character in the way that Robert Downey Jr. has completely transformed everybody's understanding of Iron Man, including in the books themselves.
Yeah, and then the comics are, and we said it before, is it's completely different than, you know, 15 years ago, how Iron Man was written in the book is not at all how Robert Downey Jr. played him. And, you know,
and the same thing with Ruffalo playing Bruce Banner. I mean, he created a totally different take on that character than Ed Norton did, even though it still exists in the cinematic universe.
Right.
And that's what I think they're going to do with Spider-Man. I think they're going to play it just to not contradict anything that happened. So if you want to believe that the Sam Raimi movies happened, or if, God forbid, you want to believe that the Andrew Garfield movies happened, I think you can.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he changed his costume. Like, if you want to see the origin, we did it twice. Go watch whichever one you want.
Yeah, which also makes me wonder what else they're going to change about the books, because they've obviously shown that they're willing to change things up and not follow the books slavishly and to make, you know, rearrangements and things like that, drop things, add things. So it does make me very curious, because I'm rereading the books right now in Civil War. And what are they going to change? Obviously, they had to bring Spider-Man in because he's such an integral part of the original storyline. Yeah. You can't have it without him. But what else are they going to do?
Well, I mean, they inject Winter Soldier pretty heavily into this movie.
It looks like he's the focus point on this.
Yeah. Right.
It really looks like from the trailer is that he's the problem that Steve and Tony take different sides on.
Right. Yeah.
And that becomes a bigger issue. So I think it's, they want superhero registration because of Winter Soldier's running around.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, we see in the trailer, we see William Hurt as Thunderbolt Ross pretty much read off the other the Avengers movies and Winter Soldier. He's like, look, you guys blew up New York. You blew up DC. You just dropped a European nation. Like, the world doesn't want this anymore. And now you have this assassin running around that Captain America refuses to stop.
Yeah. And I think it will be interesting, you know, something that really, I mean, we've talked before about Civil War, the comic, regardless of what Joe Quesada or whatever other dope was involved and tried to convince us that you could side with Tony Stark was liar. Go read that book. Captain America's the good guy. Iron Man's the bad guy. And my concern...
Iron Man's written as a bad guy in his own book at that time.
Right. And that's my concern about this movie. These trailers don't really look like Iron Man is, like, it doesn't look like they're writing him as a villain, but it doesn't look like it's easy to get behind him. It still looks like Captain America is the good guy.
Well, Robert Downey Jr. was asked, like, a year ago when they were shooting it, they said, somebody said, well, do you win or does Captain America win? And he goes, it's called Captain America Civil War, not Iron Man Civil War.
Right.
And so I wouldn't be surprised. I think the sympathy you're going to have for Tony is because Robert Downey Jr. is playing him again.
Yeah.
Right. And even in the original book, nothing really changes. You know, it doesn't really change anything. It's like a typical, you know, Brian Bendis story. Just kind of peters out into nothing at the end. And at the end, you're left wondering, why did I care?
Because he spends the ends of his story setting up his next story.
Exactly. Right.
And, you know, it's something where it's like, you know, the Registration Act or whatever gets passed. And then 4 years later, they were like, hey, we repealed the Registration Act. Like, Luke Cage can come out of hiding or whatever. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, how much of... I think I'd like to hear them mention Daredevil and maybe mention the Purple Man in this to show, look, now it's not just these huge events. It's New York is having a string of superpowered villains running around, guys putting on devil costumes and blowing up buildings. It's like, you know, it's a good opportunity, I think, to start tying some of the TV shows into the movies.
I can definitely see that going the other way. I think when this Defenders movie happens, what if the Registration Act sticks? Then the Defenders are going to be this team put together underneath the Registration Act, and I'm guessing because of the way it was those characters all took kind of Cap's side in Civil War in the books.
Yeah,
Luke Cage, Daredevil, Jessica Jones. I could see just the same way that Winter Soldier blew up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
I could see
Civil War
blowing up Daredevil. The Netflix universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Daredevil comes out before Civil War, so they might even be dropping hints in the Netflix show about Civil War.
Maybe, but I doubt it. I mean,
I think it'll be self-contained, but I think it's an opportunity to.
Especially because it's going to be a Daredevil Punisher story, and I don't see them talking about national issues in a story like that.
Yeah.
I just wonder how the Doctor Strange movie is going to fit into all this, too.
Yeah, I mean, Doctor Strange will be such an origin movie. It really does feel like leading up to Doctor Strange, it's a lot like what it felt like with Iron Man 1, where Iron Man 1 was the first big Marvel movie. We didn't know anything about what Marvel was planning or where we were going. Certainly no one could have predicted where we are now. But I think with Doctor Strange, because there's so many new properties coming out and there's kind of like a changing of the guard happening where... Yeah. I mean, spoilery maybe here, potential spoilers. In Captain America Civil War, Steve Rogers might get killed. Like, they might assassinate him in this movie like they did in the comic.
I'm going to say no because of Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, but that could be something where, you know, if they assassinate him in Civil War, maybe Tony gets his hands on the Infinity Gauntlet and brings him back. Like,
I'm digging your fan fiction, baby.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm saying is, it's like, why did they hire the guy who plays Winter Soldier? Why is he signed for 9 movies? His contract is for 9 movies. You're telling me he's going to play Winter Soldier for 9 movies? Sure. No, the dude's going to be Captain America, and they already said that Chris Evans wanted to get out. He wanted to go into like directing or whatever. So it's like he's getting too expensive. Robert Downey Jr. is getting too expensive. It's like they're going to start phasing a lot of these guys out, I think.
Yeah, but you can't kill Iron Man.
Agreed. And I think we've talked before.
Have him retire and not be in the Avengers anymore.
Yeah.
We already know there's no plans for any more Iron Man movies.
Yeah.
I mean,
that could all change too because they removed that guy, the Marvel head guy, from Penny Pinchin. These movies.
Penny Pinch and Crab?
What was that guy? You know that guy?
Yeah, his name was Ike Perlmutter Penny Pinch and Crab.
Yeah. But it's like, so they've kind of opened up their own budgets so where they could potentially do an Iron Man 4. I'm sure if Captain America Civil War makes a buttload of money, we'll see an Iron Man 4. And it could just be like a fallout movie from these big Avengers movies and Civil War.
Well, the trouble is you have to fit that in the overall story arc, though, because you're eventually going to go cosmic. And that's where I'm wondering where a Doctor Strange is going to fit in, because, yes, he's a person and he's in New York and he's historically been associated with, you know, the Defenders or even the Avengers at times.
Yeah.
But really his powers, and especially from a movie perspective, from a special effects perspective, he really fits in more with the cosmic-y stuff like your Guardians of the Galaxy and whatnot.
And I think that's kind of what I'm getting at is with this like kind of quote unquote change in the guard where, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch has the same fan appeal that Robert Downey Jr. now has, to where you could kind of have Robert Downey Jr. step down, Benedict Cumberbatch step up as Doctor Strange and build your new universe around him with Black Panther and the Inhumans and Captain
and
Marvel. Ant-Man.
I think Doctor Strange is going to be a lot like Ant-Man, where it's going to be very self-contained with just a couple of nods to the bigger Marvel universe.
Right. And I think that's interesting. That's probably how they're going to explain something like the Soul Gem will be in Doctor Strange. I think we talked maybe his like
the Eye
of Agamotto will be one of the gems because it just simplifies everything. But yeah, it's like Crossbones is in this movie. Crossbones kills Captain America. You know, it's like the rumor is that Giant Man's going to show up in this movie.
In fact,
pretty much a spoilery toy.
Yeah, Toy Fair, they showed the Build-A-Figure for these figures as Giant Man.
Yeah, and it's like, you know.
Which I really thought it had to be in an early version of the script. I really thought Ant-Man was going to end with Giant Man.
Yeah.
Because Ant-Man ends in, spoiler for Ant-Man, which has been out on Blu-ray for 6 months. Ant-Man ends with him going into the microverse and then coming back and they already showed like a giant Thomas the Tank Engine and a keychain tank and a giant ant coming around. And I'm like, oh, when he in the movie, I was like, when he comes back, he's going to be 10 feet tall. He's going to be giant man. And then he came back normal size.
Yeah.
Which to me means somebody at Marvel went, save it for Civil War.
Yeah. And it's, you know.
Oh, here's another thing. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. But speaking of Ant-Man, in this trailer, we get him riding Hawkeye.
An arrow.
Yeah. And everyone's like going nuts for Spider-Man. And that was like the moment that I was like, fuck Spider-Man. Ant-Man's riding Hawkeye's fucking arrow. And it's like, as soon as they made an Ant-Man movie and then they said he was going to be in the Avengers, that's all I wanted. I just want to see him like riding on the little arrow. It's like, how cool is that?
That's on a continuous loop in your house, isn't it?
Yeah. It just replays that little shot. I think that stuff kind of interesting. If you look at the teams, I think it does make sense that we'll get Giant Man, because, no offense, I'm on Team Cap, but Iron Man's got fucking Vision, War Machine. It's like all the big hitters are on Iron Man's side.
And Thor is conspicuously absent.
The rumors are, not confirmed, that Thor and Hulk are in Thor 3. And
right.
I did hear.
That's going to be so big that there was a theory, actually. One of the people around the shop posted this theory about Iron Man 3, Winter Soldier, and Thor Dark World, why none of them help each other.
Yeah.
And from a marketing perspective, it's, of course, we keep the solo books going,
Just
like the comics. You know, the Avengers don't help Captain America every month.
Right.
Even though there are stories in Captain America which could destroy the world.
Yeah.
So treating the movies like publishing, it makes sense, but there's a theory that they all happen at the same time,
right?
Yeah.
Which is why they're all occupied. So Ragnarok could be going on during Civil War,
right?
Which is funny because Thor is not involved in Civil War in the comic because he was dead.
Yeah.
And there's a big thing where there's a clone Thor, which they called Clor, even though he's really Cyborg, he's not.
Yeah, I seriously doubt we'll see a clone of Thor in this movie because, yeah. I mean, I think Baron Zemo is supposed to be in this movie. Like, this movie's kind of...
Well, it's a Captain America movie.
Yeah, it is. And it's very full already, I guess is what I'm saying. Vision and Scarlet Witch are supposed to have big segments of this movie where they
explore. Looks like they fight each other.
Yeah,
but I guess they're trying to explore their powers and define what those characters can do since Age of Ultron was so full to the brim. You know, so there's that thing in the ocean in the trailer that comes out of the ocean. It's like a prison. It looks like it's going to be like
the raft.
Or the vault, maybe. And it's like, you know, so maybe they're just going to lock half the Avengers up at the end of this movie. So I think it'll be as close to the comic as the Winter Soldier movie was as close to the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Right. Or Avengers was as close to the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. Yeah.
Right.
Avengers.
Where it's like the basic premise.
And it had aliens.
Right.
Yeah.
Fight Loki. You know, that's what brings the team together.
But
you know?
Now here's a question. As you said, this movie is very full. The same way Age of Ultron was very full and slightly disappointing. We know Batman versus Superman has been very full, and that's been one of the main criticisms about it is like, oh, they're throwing in Doomsday and Lex Luthor and The Flash and Aquaman and Wonder Woman. This is going to be terrible. But we're talking about this trailer going, they're throwing in Spider-Man and Vision and Scarlet Witch and Ant-Man into Giant Man, and it looks great.
Well, we have not had an Aquaman solo movie. We have not had a Flash solo movie before.
Right.
Superman versus Batman. We haven't. DC has not done the groundwork with the individual characters to make that work. Marvel's been smarter because their first few individual movies haven't been over full.
Right.
Really. It's now that everything is starting to interconnect and the pieces are starting to lock together. We're in a giant act two. Right now, where everything kind of interlocks together. They may be separate. They may be going in separate directions.
Yeah.
But their stories are still interlocked.
And I think I'm not so much of the opinion that DC can't do it the reverse, is do your big movie and then have everyone do their own movie. I think it's much more difficult. But with Marvel, they've had some kind of roadmap from Iron Man to here. They've had a general plan. I'm sure they have a plan that, you know, I'd give my firstborn to see for what the next 10 years are going to look like. But it's like DC just seems like they're driving a car without brakes. And they don't really seem to have any idea where they're going. It's like, All right, well, Superman didn't do so good, so what worked? We'll throw Batman in there. And, you know what, this is a good opportunity. If we got Superman and Batman, let's do Wonder Woman 2. Yeah, if we got the three of them, we might as well do the Justice League, but, you know, it's still a Superman movie, so make sure Lex Luthor's in it.
So basically, they're doing the Marvel scheme in reverse.
Yeah.
Start with the big movie and then devolve into the individual movies rather than build up individual movies and then give us the big show.
Well, they're doing it at even stranger pace because they're building up. This is like the half big movie, and then Justice League is supposed to be next, and then it's going to break into Wonder Woman and Flash. Well,
yeah,
and
I guess there are.
And then there's no plans for. I think there's a plans for Justice League 2, like at the end of all this, but
unless it bombs, and I think,
and unless they move up this Ben Affleck Batman movie that they seem to want to make,
and it's like, you know, stuff like Suicide Squad, I think, is interesting. It's just. Like I said, I'm not opposed to them doing it the reverse. I just think they don't have the map or the foresight that Marvel had to say, all right, if we're going to do this, how do we get to Avengers? Like, they had the slow, steady buildup of, you know, hiring the right people, making the right moves at the right time, greenlighting the right projects at the right time.
Remember, it wasn't entirely about Avengers initially. When they announced it, it was Iron Man and Hulk.
Yep.
And the whole idea was that Marvel was going to take the characters that
no one else wanted,
or the options had lapsed. Obviously, Spider-Man and X-Men, because we were coming out of the 90s, we're in the early to mid 2000s. We're coming out of a time for Marvel where their whole profit was based around Spider-Man and the X-Men, and everybody else was a second tier.
Yeah.
So the original, I remember reading the press releases like 2006, and the press release said, we're going to make mid-budget movies. We're not going to spend as much on Iron Man that Sony spent on Spider-Man because we probably won't do as well.
Yeah.
Because people don't know who Iron Man is. But we could spend, you know, $60 million because Marvel was also looking at Blade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know what? Blade costs like $30 million and it made like $80 million. Spider-Man costs, you know, I'm making numbers up, but $150 million and made $500 million.
Right.
So let's make Iron Man a little more expensive than Blade because you can't do Iron Man on that budget.
Right.
And if we can make $100 million,
yeah, but then
we're fine.
Then it fucking blows up.
It blows up, and then they started thinking. They said initially when Nick Fury shows up in Iron Man as the Avengers initiative, it was just an Easter egg.
Yeah.
They didn't have the script for Avengers. They certainly didn't have Joss Whedon.
Yeah, totally.
Because it was four. Avengers comes out 4 years after Iron Man. It was because Iron Man blew up that they started laying
the groundwork. That's what I'm thinking is it's like, you know, whether or not all the plans were made before Iron Man came out. Once that movie gets made and the Hulk gets made, they greenlit Captain America and Thor. As soon as they greenlight Captain America and Thor, they're thinking of doing the Avengers.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I think that's always been my beef with DC is, you know, they have and have had opportunities repeatedly over the last 20 years to do a Justice League movie before Marvel even made that first Iron Man movie. And
they had a few in development that got shut down.
I mean, three or four times probably, even if you include trying to do like Superman Batman team-up movies. And it's, finally get around to doing it.
Wolfgang Peterson was going to do a Batman versus Superman in the 2000s. There was a long time where they didn't know what to do with Batman after Batman and Robin. And they greenlit a bunch of projects that didn't happen. Wolfgang Peterson's Batman versus Superman, that was supposed to happen 15 years ago. There was Frank Miller and Darren Aronofsky's Batman Year One.
Yeah.
There was Batman Beyond was optioned at one point. They were going to make Batman Beyond as a feature film with like Paul Newman as old Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And nothing got off the ground until Batman Begins. And I feel like that's what's happening now. It's just everything is getting off the ground.
And that's the thing. You know, it's just, you know, how many false starts can they withstand? Like you said, if they're going to film Wonder Woman next month, they're going to wait to see how Superman Batman does. If it bombs, they're going to pull the plug on it. Then what? And it's like,
then it's a Ben Affleck Batman movie.
Yeah.
I guarantee you there's a Ben Affleck Batman
for
movie
sure happening. Yeah.
But what's frustrating to me is that they already, I mean, if they wanted to build on something, you've already got two highly successful TV shows. And you're not going to use them.
And that's
stupid.
I think that's
those could have been your version of the individual
properties
that Marvel built their Avengers, you know, long-term story arc off
of. And it's something that,
and they refuse to use them.
And they, and not only do they refuse to use them, they keep shoehorning themselves. When the Batman movies were coming out, the Christian Bale ones, they put like training wheels on Justice League, the cartoon. We're like, you can't use any Batman villains because we might use them in the cartoon. Well, what the fuck kind of sense does that make?
Well, there is this second class citizenship to TV.
Yeah.
Where we think there isn't because we live in a golden age of television where there's things like Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad, and there's huge television shows with huge budgets that get all this prestige. So we think they're on equal footing, but it really seems the way these studios are structured. I've read Jeff Loeb in interviews where, like, even Marvel doing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daredevil, they're kind of treated second class as movies. They have to ask for permission to use anybody. And the movies have first rights to use anybody. You notice it always trickles down. It never goes up.
Yeah.
When Agent Coulson got his own show, the movie said, well, we're never going to use him again because we can't expect people to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to explain why he's alive again, so let's just never use him again.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has Sif on and Nick Fury coming on, and they mention every movie that comes out.
Yeah.
Which you know, Daredevil mentions Avengers.
Right. It's like the shows are supporting and referencing the movies, and the movies are just like, nope, we're just going to talk about our movies. We're not going to mention any.
Which is why I'm thinking as big a hit as Daredevil was, and Netflix does not release ratings, but they said they got 1 million new subscribers the month Daredevil was released.
Do they accredit that to Daredevil?
Yeah, because that was the one new show that came out. The only thing that Netflix has really said definitively is that Orange is the New Black is their most popular original program. They haven't, but they do not say how many people down. They have all the data. They won't release it.
Why? Why do you think that is?
I think because they were the first in the streaming market, and they want to be protective, and they don't want Hulu and Amazon Prime to know exactly how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Because I think they're worried about their competition.
Copying. Yeah.
And they don't worry about ratings the way networks do, so they don't have to subscribe to that model.
Right.
So they're doing very well, but that's why I think it's more of an office politics thing than it's a popularity thing. I don't think we're ever going to see Daredevil in the Avengers. I don't think we're going to see him in Infinity War. As popular as Daredevil is, and this second season,
which is
coming out next week, looks like it'll be just as popular as season one. I don't think they're going to make that leap over because the movies don't need the TV shows.
And I agree, the movies don't need the TV shows, but the Russo brothers who did Winter Soldier, they're doing Civil War, and they're doing Avengers Infinity Part 1 and 2. They said there's 86 characters in Infinity War.
Jesus.
Now, and they said this at a convention, and I think that number came up or down by like two or three numbers. They said like 84, 85, and then they clarified it at another convention. They said 86.
But are 40 of them cop number one? No, they said
named characters. These are people, and it's like, and so sit down. And if you've got free time like I do, sit down and write down every single character, a named character that appears in the movies that are from the comics. And there's like 40.
I'd say we're more than that. I mean, if you include all Easter eggs and little things like a line here and there.
Are they counting villains too?
I'm sure they are.
Who the fuck knows? But that's what I'm saying.
But there could be just tons and tons of cameos in there.
Yeah. That's, right. That's what I'm thinking. You're going to see somebody for four seconds.
We're not
going to
see Daredevil. We're not going to see Jessica Jones, even for a cameo in these movies.
Well, there is.
I think we're probably up to 80. Because if you start including things like Guardians of the Galaxy, which, I mean, if we're going in space to fight Thanos and Guardians of the Galaxy is that big hit, we are.
And we haven't
There's probably 30 characters in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and we haven't seen Ms. Marvel yet, Captain Marvel.
We don't know how many characters are going to be in Doctor Strange. Black Panther.
Yeah.
And there are some characters.
One of those characters could be Ant-Man's friend.
No, but I think it's
you know, like Michael Pena could be in it, like, yo, man, that Thanos is crazy, man, crazy. Oh, and then he's out. That's a character.
That's a character.
Well, there are also some characters that really shouldn't be in a movie. They should have a TV series, but they don't really fit in with the movie, especially if you're going cosmic.
Yeah, I don't want to see Daredevil on the moon fighting Thanos.
Right. And then that's not just Marvel properties. There's a reason that BBC hasn't made a Doctor Who movie. It just would not really work that well as a movie franchise, I don't think, as it does with a TV show.
I remember there was a rumor a couple of years ago that it was going to happen, and Stephen Moffat got really mad and started yelling on Twitter, and then it just went away. Because I believe as much as he was yelling at Twitter, he was probably yelling at the BBC as loudly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, and I agree completely, you know, it's Daredevil isn't Batman. Batman, you can kind of take into space with the Justice League, and he can go to like Apocalypse and fight Darkseid. Daredevil should never leave Earth. And he really shouldn't leave New York. You know, if he wants to go to Japan, that's fine. But I don't want to see Daredevil running around in Africa with the Black Panther.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Spider-Man is pretty much your limit. That's the lowest you can go as far as from the cosmic to the street crime level.
Exactly.
I don't really buy Spider-Man when he's cosmic. I was just reading the latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
When he goes into space.
He, Nick Fury going to space, and I'm like, this is... and I thought, this isn't Spider-Man, this is Marvel Team-Up.
Yeah.
Because Marvel Team-Up, they always used to say, wasn't really in continuity, and the people that worked on it didn't feel like they were doing the real Spider-Man, because, like, Spider-Man, you know, was fighting a dinosaur inside his mouth.
Yeah.
At the same time, in Amazing Spider-Man, he was, like, trying to stop the Kingpin from, like, putting drugs on the street.
Right.
And, which is also the way I feel about Batman and the Justice League. But, yeah, but Daredevil is such a much smaller character than Spider-Man.
Right.
That I think that's why they took those characters and, like, kind of grouped them off. And I think the movies were like, we're not going to do anything with those. And some of those are monetary reasons.
And it's
Daredevil and Punisher, we didn't make money on those movies.
Right.
So we're not making any more of them.
And to some
Go
extent,
put them on TV.
You know, it makes sense. You know, the Marvel Knights brand in the comics, Daredevil doesn't really team up with the Avengers. Punisher doesn't ever really run in the Avengers. Why would he? It's like every time they do it, it's kind of like, well, Punisher's running around murdering drug dealers and, you know, rapists, and the Avengers are fighting the Red Skull with the Cosmic Cube. And it's like, it's just too far removed.
Right.
In fact, every time they kind of put the Punisher into the larger Marvel Universe, it's like he does, the closer he gets to the center of the Marvel Universe, the weirder it gets.
Yeah, because he's just a guy with a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a who let you in here feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
To it.
And it's like Captain America beats up guys with guns every day. And now we're supposed to believe here's a guy that's like can team up with Captain. It's like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, popularity trumps all.
Essentially, yeah.
Remember when Wolverine beat Lobo?
Right.
Because of popularity. That's
exactly.
They didn't even have a reason. They
couldn't even show the fight.
No, they fall
behind a bar,
and then Wolverine's the only one that gets up.
Yep.
Because obviously they had the same discussion in the office. Like, how the hell is Wolverine going to fight Lobo? I don't know, but the fans voted for Wolverine.
Yeah, well, that's like, you know, Captain America fighting Batman in the crossover, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were just mutually respecting each other while they're fighting.
Yeah.
Oh, you're very, very good. And then I think, like, Batman, they're fighting in a sewer, and Batman just blows up the sewer, and he's like, you stay on that side.
Just get away from this guy.
Yeah.
Tie.
Like I said, going back to, like, Civil War, I do think this will probably be Marvel's highest grossing movie. I think this will beat Avengers. Because I think with the addition of Spider-Man, War Machine looks like he gets murdered in this movie. It's like, I think people are going to go bananas for this. And it's the Winter Soldier was probably their best made movie. And I think giving the guys who did that movie more characters, a bigger budget, and a bigger spotlight, and Spider-Man is going to make it go that much higher than Winter Soldier did.
Yeah, and Age of Ultron was a bit of a disappointment. Although, what worries me now, and I don't have any reservations about this movie. I think it's going to be fantastic. But we've talked about how every director's second movie at Marvel kind of sucks, and they kind of get beaten down.
Yeah.
Like Age of Ultron's not as good as Avengers.
Iron Man 2
is not as good as Iron Man. And you hear all these stories about how, like, on the sequel, the director's like, well, I made a big hit for you. Give me more creative control. And Marvel's like, how about less?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to that extent, maybe that is what they're doing, but I think...
And maybe the Russos are okay with it because they're TV guys. They did a lot of Community.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, when they're making Community, they have to do what Dan Harmon says, no matter how many episodes they've made.
Right.
If Dan Harmon's like, Alison Brie wouldn't act that way, well, guess what? Now she's not acting that way.
Yeah, but I think it's also something, too. Joss Whedon did Avengers. Did he even want to do a sequel? Or were they like, you got to do it, we'll give you a buttload of money?
Well, they gave him that big deal just to kind of hang around, like... to consult on all the movies and then make Avengers 2.
Right. Yeah.
He taught them how to do an ensemble picture, essentially.
Yeah, because he did it with Serenity and everything.
Right. Yep.
And it's something with the Russos. They're already signed on for the next, arguably the biggest three movies Marvel will ever do, is Civil War and the two Infinity War. It's like, Doctor Strange isn't going to be that big. It'll be good, I think, but
be Ant-Man.
Right, it'll be like Ant-Man or maybe Iron Man.
And I would say Benedict Cumberbatch, as you said, as much as he's got a big fan base, he's not a major star here yet. I'd say in America, he's probably about as big as Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Like, people know him.
Right.
Unless you're like an Anglophile.
Right. Because if you're a Sherlock Doctor Who fan, and the two fan bases overlap.
Stephen Moffat.
But that is a fan base that is not necessarily connected yet with Marvel, is the Doctor Who / Sherlock fan base. So if they can drag that portion of geekdom, you know, over into superhero movies just to see Benedict Cumberbatch as somebody other than Sherlock,
that could be
a huge boost.
Marvel has come out and said Doctor Strange is their universe's Doctor Who. It's the same guy. And now we've got a chance to see Benedict Cumberbatch kind of play a version of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's brilliant casting. It's probably as good a casting as Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. I think it nails it, and it'll probably redefine that character like Iron Man or Robert Downey Jr. Did for Tony Stark.
Well, one could certainly hope so. That's why I'm thinking that the Doctor Strange is more like a Guardians of the Galaxy than it is an Ant-Man.
It'll be something way different.
It'll be just that one half step above.
Yeah.
I think it will be, because it's also the first time Marvel is really dealing with magic, so that tone is going to have to shift and be a little more self-contained.
Yeah,
because everything's been technology-based.
Yeah, and all the early reviews for this, or not the early reviews, because such things don't exist, because the movie's not done, but there are early interviews with Kevin Feige and everyone talking about the movie was that it was something where they were trying to do something visually different with this movie that it hasn't been done, that it won't look like any other movie. And I think when you're going to, like, the astral plane, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm worried about it, because it's like,
you have visions of the Bakshi Spider-Man.
Exactly. And I think that's kinda,
I have visions of the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern on Oa.
And that's what I'm worried about, is that this will be the movie where they reach too far and kind of like a less is more type thing. So I'm kind of like, well, what are they?
But they've done a good job of matching the property with the tone so far. They haven't really fuck that up yet.
Right, and like Guardians of the Galaxy is a great example, where it's like, that was a movie where who wanted to see it 10 years ago? Nobody. Yeah. And they made it, and it's one of their more popular movies, to where like, that sequel's coming out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People are super excited. And it was a movie that wasn't really like anything else. It's
no, you don't
so
have
different.
Raccoons and trees in normal superhero movies.
And it was just really fun. And I guess that's hopefully Doctor Strange will look more like that than Green Lantern, I guess.
And then they've also rebooted the character in the books too.
Yeah.
Because they've taken a really fresh approach to what is it really like to be Doctor Strange on an everyday basis. I mean, before it was all that, you know, stoner astral plane stuff.
Right.
This really roots him in reality and says, okay, if you were a sorcerer supreme, what does everyday look like to you? So he's walking down the street seeing all this astral planey stuff that normal people can't see.
Right.
And he's dealing with problems, like everyday problems, like the monsters are coming into his house.
Right. And that's a great book. It's the first time I've really read a monthly Doctor Strange book. Mm-hmm. I did a couple miniseries that have been good, and it's good. I mean, Marvel's smart. You know, they're launching this movie. The hype for the movie's up, so the book's selling great. No one would have given a shit about this book 2 years ago.
No.
But this book will probably last at least until that movie comes out. Might get a new number one afterwards, because that's what they do when the movies come out. But it's like, it's exactly the kind of thing we were comparing when we're talking about DC and Marvel. This is an example of Marvel taking a character that they couldn't sell the rights for. That's essentially all the movies Marvel's making are the characters they could not sell to other studios back in the 70s and 80s, and making those movies as best as they can. And it's something where DC, it's like, you know, all they know how to do is make Batman over and over and over again. Instead of taking time to think, all right, what makes, you know, a Flash movie work? They're not thinking like that. They're thinking, just make it just like Batman.
I mean, can you imagine if DC tried to make a Blue Beetle movie?
Yeah.
How bad that would suck,
right?
Because they're so tone deaf.
But I think if weren't we talking Nathan Fillion and that other guy from Serenity, we're talking about doing a Blue Beetle Booster Gold movie.
Oh yeah, I think that was a joke, but still.
Totally a joke. But
Booster Gold did appear in Smallville once, and it wasn't great.
Yeah
and that was Jeff Johns. Yeah.
But Marvel would take that same concept and knock it out of the fucking park.
And that's what
park.
I'm saying. A Booster Gold and a Blue Beetle team-up movie starring Nathan Fillion and another guy, if the reins were reversed...
It's a superhero buddy movie.
It would be gangbusters. Yeah. And it's something where it's like... And that's the frustration, is DC has just as good properties as Marvel does, and they own the rights to everybody. They haven't been forced like Marvel has to kind of dig into the mud to find Guardians of the Galaxy. Are you fucking kidding? No, right. The fuck that book. Yeah. But like, Marvel made the movie, and now all these people care about it, which is awesome because those characters can work, and that's the frustration. Is DC already owns everybody, and they keep fucking getting stuck.
And they own characters that have 70 years. Well. Actually, probably more closer to 60 years in some cases, yeah, of stories to draw from, and they can't do it.
If it's not Batman, they can't figure it out.
Look at the publishing arm. They're publishing 10 Batmans a book, and they're going to reboot the whole universe again?
Yeah. All right. And it's like you said, it's like they're the Burger King of fucking comic book movies, where it's like they're not even trying to get ahead of the game.
If DC didn't have Batman, they'd be Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically. I mean, and if you look at the market shares, I don't know that these numbers are available. Like, Diamond publishes, like, the pie chart of who does what. Marvel has over 50% of the, like, pie chart. DC and Image are, like, almost neck and neck. And it's like, you guys have fucking Batman? If you didn't have Batman, Walking Dead and all the other shit that Image produces would have left you in the dust 10 years ago.
Well, Walking Dead is now Image's Batman.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In the 90s, it used to be
Spawn.
And they still make Spawn, but no one cares.
Right. But they sell one copy a month.
Yeah, Walking Dead, and it's because of that TV show.
Yeah, you got people walking into your store asking for Walking Dead
right.
stuff.
Yeah, and Walking Dead and Saga outsell every Superman book.
Saga sells that well?
Yeah, yeah. Saga outsells Superman.
Is Saga an Image book?
Yeah. Brian K. Vaughan, yeah.
Saga stands so on its own, I actually didn't know who published it.
Yeah, and it's one of those books, and you know, to Image's credit too, they're kicking the pants off Marvel and DC when it comes to like the trade paperback game, which, as we've said before on the show, as soon as your book finishes, put the trade out. And both Marvel and DC play this fucking bullshit game of, well, it's going to be an oversized hardcover first. And it's like, well, no one wants oversized hardcovers except guys like us. The general public just wants to read the story.
They want trade paperback.
Yeah, right. You finish 6 issues of Spider-Man, the next week, the fucking trade should come out. Well, like, I can't reorder those books.
It's because they're following the publishing arm. Like, is that in publishing, if you're publishing a novel, to do the hardcover first, sell for 25. If the sales are really good, then they republish it cheaper to sell it to the people whose price was a barrier. I agree. I don't think comics work that way. What would be even better is if they did it backwards. If they put the trade out right away,
yeah,
just so people could read it, and then the people that really cared about that story
do the nice hardcover.
You know, maniacs like us who already bought the monthlies and want to have a nice edition.
Right. Right.
Then you put out the absolute or the omnibus.
And well, DC can't even put out half of their really good, you know, historical stories in a decent format.
Yeah, there's,
you know, compare their omnibuses and their, you know, masterworks to Marvel's, or their version of the masterworks to Marvel's.
The archives,
and
yeah,
you just don't see it.
Yeah, they're getting a little better. But to be fair about DC's omnibuses, it's all reprinting stuff they've already done. They're the golden age omnibuses you were talking about before the show. They're just taking the archives, which I have, which
and
are
the
pretty
Chronicles
much defunct.
And trade.
And yeah, and just reprinting those
right.
books. The Neil Adams omnibus is just the hardcovers they already did.
And I think that's something that's really frustrating is, you know, you can go back and get, especially now Marvel's doing like the Epic Collections, they've done the Masterworks and hardcover and trade. DC, there's so much stuff that either has never been reprinted or has been out of print for 20, 30 years. It's like, you know, why is the majority of the JLA Satellite era out of print?
Yeah, why can't I get the Mark Waid run of Flash?
Yeah, not even in trade can you get that anymore.
Had it, and it went out of print, like, what, 15 years ago?
They never did the whole run. No, the trade.
And they never finished
they
it.
They only did trades of a couple of story arcs, and they did those while he was writing it.
Yeah.
I had those trades because I wasn't reading the monthly, but they've never gone back and done them. And I think what it is DC, as you said, DC has 75 years worth of material. I think they can't choose. I think they probably have the same budget Marvel does for the amount of trades they can put out. But as you said, they've got 40 years more stories. They've probably got, I'm just guessing, triple the amount of books in the history that Marvel did.
Yeah.
Marvel had a very narrow amount of books through most of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So where Marvel can just go, let's do Spider-Man again, when there was one Spider-Man title, when DC wants to do Batman, they're like, what Batman?
Yeah, Batman, Batman Family. You know, then you got the Batgirl.
Yeah, World's Finest.
World's Finest, Brave and Bold.
And they go back 30 years before Marvel was ever created. Yeah. So they do a lot, but it's just so much harder to be definitive.
And not only that, like you said, it's like they're reprinting an omnibus for something that's currently available in trade, right? So Geoff Johns' entire run in Green Lantern is all available in graphic novel. Every one he's ever done, you can get. And then DC's like, oh, yeah, here's two volumes of it in hardcover for an omnibus. It's like, well, how about, like, you know, Green Arrow, Green Lantern by Danny O'Neill? And it's like, we had to wait, like, another 10 years? When did you buy that?
I have a slipcase I bought 15 years ago.
15 years ago. In 15 years, they did one trade. They done the and then they finally did the absolute.
Yeah, they did the trades a couple of times. It was, like, two trades. But you're right. It would go away for years.
Yeah.
And how long did it take to finally get Neil Adams' Batman books?
Right.
Those are 10, the hardcovers are 10 years old. Then we got the trades. Now we're getting an omnibus. But before then, there was nothing.
Yeah.
And I think the other problem with DC is they don't have as much continuity that maybe they're thinking, you know what, people don't need a 5-year run of Batman, but what they want is Neil Adams' Batman. And you know what? He was never fast enough to do sequential issues.
Yeah.
Like, basically, whenever he was ready, they gave him whatever was open.
Yeah.
So, like, he would finish a story, and Julius Schwartz would be like, all right, this one's going to Detective. Then he'd bring back another story, and he'd go, all right, this one's in Batman, because that's what was in the slot.
Right.
Which is much harder than going, here's the John Romita run of Spider-Man. It's issues 39 to 80.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because, I mean, even back when, before Marvel was doing huge story arcs, they kept the creative teams on the book for a certain period of time.
Right. They didn't shake it up like DC.
Right.
Now, DC, you just got work at DC, and they gave you, like, whatever was open when you went into the office.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, I'm going to mention another podcast, which I haven't done in a long, long time. One of my favorite podcasts now is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, which is amazing. It's not entirely what you think it is.
Yeah,
it is Gilbert, so it's very Gilbert. But he has a co-host, Frank Santopadre, who's very dry, very straight. Like, on his own, you would not want to listen to this man, but he keeps Gilbert grounded.
Yeah.
While Gilbert is just telling dirty jokes, and he's like, "All right, what we're talking about is here." And he's like, "Yes, yes, we're talking about ONSs and shit." So it's incredibly entertaining. But all they talk about is old Hollywood, which is crazy. Like, they don't talk about modern things. All they want to talk about is, like, detective shows from the 70s and the studio system from the 40s and all these, like, character actors. And they love, like, the Hays Code and, like, guys who were gay and couldn't admit it and guys that were alcoholics and were covered up. They love telling dirt on people that have been dead for 40 years.
Yeah.
That sounds like our conversation with Howard Chaykin at All Yak.
Yeah, kind of. And unfortunately, I have to apologize for this. He said he would do this podcast, gave me his card, and then I never found the card again.
Yeah.
He is not on social networking. If he ever listens to it again, the invitation is open, Howard.
Yes.
Because we met him at All Yeah, and he was incredible. But it's a lot like that as a podcast. And as I was going back and forth to these shows, I did not want to listen to any music. So I was like, let me listen to podcasts. Let me just listen to some comedy. And either this week or last week, I was a little behind. He had Jackie the Joke Man Martling on from the Howard Stern Show.
Okay.
And it was one of the best podcasts I have ever listened to. It was like an hour and a half, and all they talked about were two things. Old Howard Stern stories, which made me realize how long I loved Howard Stern. I listened to Howard Stern through the 80s and probably into the early 2000s until he went to satellite, on and off. But they were telling all these great stories that I had actually heard on the radio. And they just told old, dirty jokes. And he's like, I got another joke for you. And he would just tell, like, the most awful, vile joke. And I couldn't talk because my voice was like this. And I was coming from a 4-hour show and driving out to Aurora to do a 4-hour show. So I didn't even want to talk to myself in the car. And I just had this beaming smile of just like the grossest, most nasty jokes with none of it, which I will repeat.
Yeah.
So, but you can download that podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. He also retold a joke that happened on the Howard Stern Show that was Walker, my cousin Walker, who's been on the show. He told me this joke for like the next 8 years because he loved it so much. They used to have a bit with Stuttering John, who like later appeared on The Tonight Show, was an intern. They would, Jackie and Fred Norris, who worked on Howard Stern, they would write him really mean questions and send him out to press conferences and stuff. And if he got picked, he would say the most offensive thing. And he always just read what was on the page without thinking about it.
Yeah.
And, there were, like people would like threaten to beat him up. He would get thrown out of everywhere. But the funniest one ever, he was telling the story where Ringo Starr announced his All-Star tour in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Like he was going out the road with like Joe Walsh and Dion, like all these guys. So they had this press conference. Every radio station was there. Every television outlet was there. They were all broadcasting it live, and they're taking questions from the audience. And Stuttering John gets up and he goes, "I have a question, Ringo. What'd you do with the money?" And Ringo goes, "What money?" "The money your mother gave you for singing lessons." And Walker told that joke for like the next 10 years. Just any time anyone was singing, he's like, "What'd you do with the money?" But it was the most fun I've had to listen to a podcast in a really, really long time. And he does like 2 a week. They do a short one called Frank and Gilbert's Amazing Colossal Obsessions, okay, where they talk about these like old B movies from the 50s and 60s or that are just, some are terrible and some are great, but they'll do that for 20 minutes and then they'll have an hour interview later in the week. It's really, really fun. I love it.
So I bought the Wonder Woman omnibus that George Perez did. We were talking about this. I don't know if we were on the air when we were doing this or before we started taping, but I'd never read it, but it was one of those. I missed out on his new Teen Titans omnibus, so I was like, as soon as they solicited this, I was like, I'm fucking getting it. And I started reading it this week, and it's phenomenal. It is so good, and it's something, again, things DC doesn't have in regular paperback print. And it's... the first 6 issues of that book, or the first 6 or 8, or however long that first story arc is a better Wonder Woman movie than we will ever see. It's very frustrating to read that and thinking, oh, this is the book they should be making for the movie. This is a perfect first movie. It can set up a sequel. Like, it's ready to go. Her whole origin makes sense. And it's, they're going to fucking blow it because they're going to grab some new pile of shit and they're gonna try to make that into a movie and have her run around lobbing people's heads off and forget the entire essence of that character.
Right.
But it's a phenomenal run. George Perez plots a lot of it, so it's, he has a lot of like help with writing, like Len Wein I think does a few issues helping him with the script. And it's just, you know, George Perez is one of those guys I didn't like as a kid. I remember thinking he was like really overrated and he had ugly art. And now it's like, you know, you kind of want to beat your younger self up. It's like, you have no fucking clue what you're talking about. He might not have the prettiest art you've ever seen, but no one, maybe this side of like John Romita Jr., tells a story like this guy does. It's just phenomenal work, like really cool story, all like super high, like yeah, mythological stuff.
The pacing is good.
It's yeah, just, it's perfect. And like I said, those first 6-7 issues, they deal with, Ares, and it's like, you know, it's written in the 80s, so like they set up a war between like Russia and the United States, and it's something where it's like they could make that movie and it would be like huge. And it's just like, you know, we all know it's going to be some hot mess that Zack Snyder is going to put together, and it's not going to look anything like what that character's supposed to be.
Right. Everything will be dark.
Yeah.
Everything will be.
And she'll be like this yeah, lunatic warrior, like out of 300, when it's like the whole point of this character is like violence is a last resort. Like she's here for peace, like all this stuff. And they're going to kind of throw it right out the window. So it's a great run. I highly, highly recommend it if they ever do have it in trade or if you can find it at Half Price Books, the single issues. But it's one of those runs that I didn't even know George Perez did a run on Wonder Woman. That's how, I don't know if it's just obscure or if it was just never talked about, but it's like the Wonder Woman book. If you're a fan of Wonder Woman, you should be probably reading this book.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Wonder Woman, you probably already are.
You probably already have read this book, yeah. This book.
My favorite thing, you know, people who know me know I'm going through this astronaut phase right now,
yeah,
this
yeah,
space race phase. One of the things I've been exploring is the impact of that on our popular culture. So I've been going back and diving back and listening to a lot of big, dumb space rock, which is actually a little bit timely because that guy from Emerson, Lake and Palmer just died today.
Oh, yeah.
Emerson.
Yeah, Emerson, the keyboard player. And it's interesting, you know, John and I have kind of been exploring that whole early 70s time period with the death of Bowie and, you know, John's been going back and tracing the you know, Les Paul through a Marshall stack.
Yeah, my other band, not the U2 band, but my other band, Mysterio, which is a cover band out in the Chicago suburbs, we're just getting totally into space rock. We're playing like Gunn and Lucifer's Friend and Sabbath and Cream. So we've had our head there for the last couple of months.
Yeah, and whereas you've been coming at it from a point of view of the 60s onward, I've actually been arriving at it from the opposite view of the 80s backwards. You know, a lot of the bands I liked in the 80s were more synth oriented because that's the time I grew up and that's the music that hit me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, where did that come from? So I've been diving back into bands like Kraftwerk, Amon Duel 2, Hawkwind, Cluster, things like Helios Creed, things like that, where, you know, the whole space race in the 60s, you know that these guys were maybe teenagers when that was going on. These guys who then are now in their 20s in the early 70s. And you could tell they're just fascinated by this whole thing, and they're reading sci-fi books, probably reading comic books, and they're totally into the spacing, but they're not scientists themselves. So they're creating these crazy fucked up, you know, live shows with costumes, and you know, you got Lemmy singing Silver Machine with Hawkwind, and it doesn't even look like Lemmy. You're like, holy shit, that's Lemmy, you know, before the mutton chops and everything. He's got these long greasy hair, and he's wearing this, you know, fringy kind of almost David Bowie looking thing. And it's just amazing that they had that something as buttoned down as a bunch of military guys going into space had that kind of impact on these, you know, drug using artists who then tried to create a version of that experience of space using sound.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there. Yeah, a lot of it is 12 minutes long.
Yeah, 12 minutes long and makes no fucking sense.
Yeah. Well, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That's the official Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. You can like us on Facebook, you know, and I mentioned my YouTube tribute band a couple of times. I like to keep them separate, but you know what? If you want to see me as Bono, there is video and there is audio on withoutyou2.com. We also have a Facebook page, Without You Two. Is that it? Now you can listen to us on Stitcher. You can listen to us on iTunes, and you can find all, I don't know, we're up to 180 episodes on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com.
And I can be reached on Twitter at ZenMasterGuy, and I will also be at the Irish American Heritage Center on Thursday night watching John B. Bono on St. Patrick's Day.
That'll be the day I'll be setting up seats with you.
Week.
Yeah, it's this weekend. I'm at Camaras Comics, 19 South of Grange Road in the Grange,
Caffeinated Illinois. Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!